everyone, this is Mel and this is the She Dares podcast. We're back. This is series two. And if you haven't listened to series one, please do go back and take a listen. She Dares is a community for inspirational, daring women with great stories to share from all over the world. They've pushed themselves out of their comfort zones and have some amazing advice for you listeners. I'm really excited to be speaking to Mignon today. She's currently sitting in her car doing the recording. Bless her, because it's like 31 degrees out in Australia right now. We will be talking about resilience and being her truest self throughout her life. I'm super excited that she's the first guest for series two. Let's get her on. Hey, Mignon, how are you?
I'm good. I'm hot. I shouldn't complain. It's beautiful, but ugh.
It's like polar opposites here. It's complete snow. Everything's white. I was on the mountain yesterday, absolutely freezing. I was wearing two jackets.
So. I don't miss that.
Thanks so much for being on the show. You know what She Dares is all about. It's about, you know, stepping out of your comfort zone, moving forward in life, being daring.
I love it. I've listened to all the episodes. I love it. Claire's my favourite, but yeah, they're so great.
Thanks. So yeah, can you tell me a time where you stepped out of your comfort zone?
It probably started when I was about 18. And when I left high school, rather than go to university, my mum offered me a one-way ticket to go to New York and then on to London subsequently. So I decided to take that. I got a job working as a camp counselor in New Jersey, and it was massive, right? I'd never left Australia. I'd never even been on a plane. So here I was, 18, a pretty naive girl from the Northern Beaches. I get on this plane. I go over to first to LA, then over to New York, because that's how the planes went at that time. And I arrive in New York. I don't know what I'm doing. I catch a bus to the center of New York City, and I have to get on the bus at Central Station to get to New Jersey. So I get there to this bus station, and I realize that I've missed my bus, and the next one is not until like 6 o'clock that night. And I was absolutely so scared that I sat at that bus stop the entire day. I literally didn't even have any food. I didn't move. I didn't go to the toilet. I just sat on my bag and just waited, because I didn't know what, like, I was so out of my comfort zone and so fearful, and this big pit in my stomach, that I just waited there. And so when I got to the summer camp and everyone was like, oh, how did you find New York? Did you see the Statue of Liberty? I was like, no, I did nothing. And their faces, I remember their faces of just like, so like, why would you do that? And then I was like, oh, I can't do that to myself again. I'm just not going to do that. I decided then actually that I was always going to live in a space where I was going to try to push myself into that weird space where your stomach kind of feels a bit upside down. And I was just going to do it anyway. And that was really a kind of a pivotal moment. That was the moment I realized that's what I was going to do. And that's what I did ever since.
Why did your mum buy you a one-way ticket?
My mum has just always been a believer in me that I would always make my way. I'd find my way. And I guess it was just a great lesson to me that she just really trusted my judgment and saw a strength in me that I perhaps didn't see in myself. So it was a beautiful gift, actually. I tell people this and they're horrified. They're like, who sends their child overseas when they're 18 and goes like, see ya? Like, but I remember saying this to her and she was like, it'll be fine. You'll get back. I mean, as it happens, it took me 25 years to get back, but I think she meant I was going for a good time, not a long time, but
yeah, I mean, 18.
Yeah. So like I said, I was not a scared little girl, but I was naive to a lot of things and I was uncertain. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was always someone that was not different, but like I didn't hang out with the cool kids and all the popular girls. So I just always knew that I wanted something different, but I didn't know what that was. And I think my mum just saw that an opportunity to kind of have a world view was probably more invaluable than going to university, because I didn't know what I wanted to do at university. So
yeah,
it's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
It's very, very unique. But like, I guess, I mean, from what you're saying now, you're totally glad that happened and it was the best life lesson.
Oh, 100%. I mean, look, the life lessons I had just from that, like that ticket, and where that ticket actually really finally led me is actually kind of like a bit of a metaphor, right? Like I didn't go to university, but I went from New York, where I was working as a nanny to a French sculptor. And that really was a weird time because actually that was a very hard job. And I had to work from 7 a.m. until 11 at night with this family that treated me so badly. That actually was kind of like a birth of like trying times and this idea of like, who am I and well, how much could I handle in a situation? It was so difficult that I actually then in the middle of the night packed my bags and fled, literally fled, left some of my stuff there and fled to London. So, you know, that's what I mean. Like this one-way ticket led me to London, led me to Amsterdam, led me to Salzburg, led me to Brisbane, all of which is kind of from this one, I guess, gift my mum gave me. She'll love that. She'll love that. She'll be like super proud too.
So can you talk a little bit about the decisions that kind of led you to where you are today?
I don't really make conscious decisions. It's sort of like an opportunity and I always pick a path and I don't waver from that. So, for example, I get to London, I get an opportunity to work at the biggest TV company in the world. I pick that path and I go with it. I go to Amsterdam and put myself in tricky positions where I don't have a job. I don't know the language. It's cold. I'm huddled up in this small little village outside of Amsterdam. But I'm like, it's a path. It's chosen and I have to continue on it. You know, you have to see where this outcome goes. You can't go back. You always have to just keep moving forward. That's the intention. And I guess that's what I set myself, the intention of propelling myself forward.
When you decided then like to pack your bags after this nannying gig and going to London, talk me through then how you kind of worked through work into London, I guess.
I fled New York. Sounds really epic, right? I fled New York, but that's what I did. I got on a plane and it was December 1996. I flew in, I arrived, again, always these awkward situations where I arrive into cities and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I get into London, I get off the plane and this minicab driver, I had 40 pounds. I don't even know what I was thinking, but I had 40 pounds. And this minicab driver comes up to me and he's like, well, where do you want to go? And I was like, I don't know. It's 11 o'clock at night in London. And he's like, I know where you want to go. You want to go to Earl's Court. That's where all the backpackers go. That's where you're going. So we drive and it's going to cost me 20 pounds. I get to Earl's Court and then I'm parked up in a backpackers with 20 pounds left to my name. I'm like, what am I going to do? Like I've got no friends, no money. It's winter and this is it. But again, this idea of that's the moment where the magic happens, right? You're at this place where you can let the fear of that paralyze you. And, you know, I could go, Mom, I'm coming home. I'm so scared. Or I'm going to push through that because what's on the other side is going to be so much greater. The win is going to feel awesome. The win is going to feel spectacular. So there I am, Earl's Court. I go and get the TNT magazine. The TNT magazine was like a backpackers magazine back when they had those things.
I remember that magazine.
And I look in there and it says pub staff needed, Earl's Court pub, live above the pub and do 3 nights a week and you can live there for free. And I was like, this is it. This is my path. I just went and I got the job. And there I was working in a pub, making new friends, living for free. That's how it goes. But, you know, it could have gone either way, right? You roll the dice and it could be that it plays out badly. But it didn't play out badly. And then I was there for more than 10 years, right? You know, it was just seeking out opportunities and being open to those. I think that's really important. Just leaving yourself open. That can be quite scary because mm-hmm. that's vulnerable, right? Being vulnerable in that situation is hard, right? Because the instinct in anybody is to close off and protect yourself. But you have to stand there and sort of face that fear and move forward.
You seem so, so strong, like just packing your bags from Australia, going to New York, and then again, having a terrible kind of job and moving back or going to London. Like the amount of resilience there seems like really, really high. How have you experienced resilience in the rest of your life?
I would say actually my working life has made me the most resilient, because that's where you spend most of your day and you interact with the kind of people that you probably wouldn't even choose to be your friends, right? So you're in this situation, you turn up to a new job. I remember one of my jobs, it wasn't a fancy job, I was a PA, but I was at this big TV company. I was working for this really, really strong woman, which at the time I was delighted, right? I love strong women. I'm a strong woman. But she was the kind of strong woman that doesn't really want to build up other strong women. So the entire time I was there, and I was there for just under a couple of years, she basically made my life a living hell. So I'd have to come into the office and she would be yelly and she would be bullying, and I would go into the bathroom and I would just cry into my sleeve. I would just like cry into my sleeve, because like obviously you're sitting in a cubicle, you don't want anyone else to hear you crying as well. So I'd cry into my sleeve, dust myself down, I'd get back out there and I'd just be like, no, you're not going to break me. You're not going to break me. This is going to be my time. I'm going to learn something from this. So I just kept telling myself that's what's going to happen. And then the awards season came up and she was in LA and she called me from LA, and I was meant to book a table for these big awards in London. And she hadn't given me any details, so I had to take a decision about who was going to sit at that table. I remember the awards people saying, I really encourage you to put these people on the table, which is basically them saying those who are going to win the awards. But I was like, okay, well, that sounds right. I can't get in touch with my boss. I'm going to take a decision on her behalf because I have to do it now. So when she rang me, I told her what had happened, and she just started screaming down the phone, who said you could do this and that and rah, rah, rah. So I just got the phone and just hung up on her. I was like, bang, this thing came upon me. And so I hung up on it. And obviously that did something to her too, because I called her out, right? I was like, I'm not going to take this kind of behavior. So I was the one taking this resilience and taking this, I guess, taking things with grace, and she didn't. So she comes back from LA, flies back in, and she gives me this gift, right? Like she comes up and she's like, she didn't really say sorry, but she's like, I've bought you something. So she puts this thing on the table. I'll never forget it. I was like, and it was pasta shaped as penises. Like, unbelievable.
I mean, what message was that, you know?
I really don't know. But the message was clear to me that I was not right here anymore. And whatever, like, I know it sounds weird, but the lessons were learned. And then after 2 years, I moved on to better and greater things. And actually, she helped me move on. So that's interesting, right? Like, she broke me, but she also decided, because I didn't break, that she would help me move on to the next level, if you like. So there's the lesson in resilience, right? Carry on. No matter how, I mean, I don't encourage people to sit through those situations, right? That's not the message. But I think it's important to try to reshape your thinking about that situation every time you go. Try to reframe your thinking about what's going to happen for you. What can you take out of that day? What's going to work for you to get you through? Because every day you can decide how you take that. You can decide how you feel about that, because you're in charge of those things. She's not in charge of that. You are.
Totally. And I think, like, especially when you're a lot younger and you don't have a lot of experience, it's really difficult to see that almost. You know, you kind of feel like you're hired, and then it's like you want to do the best job possible, but this person or these people, this organization, are like stopping you from doing that. Why?
Well, 100%. I was always taught to respect authority, right? Like, to not question things. And I was quite fearful of that. And I think that was kind of detrimental, because I see young women now that do challenge that, right? And say, that isn't right. You can't do that. Why can't I do these things? But back then, and I sound like a nana, but back then I was just told that was the way things are. And I accepted that. I accepted that as the way it is. So like, yeah, 100%. She just said, that's how it's going to be. And I respected that that was the right way. It wasn't, but it did teach me a lot.
And I think that's a really important message, that no matter what actually happens, whether it's bad, whether it's good, it's always a lesson.
Oh,
no matter what.
Absolutely. Everything, it's like a layer effect, right? Like, everything you do is like another tool in your kit bag. Like, you can draw upon so many things and be like, okay, well, she wasn't right, but now I know this resilience thing. I've built this shell. I've built this courage. Hanging up on her was courage, right? You're basically saying to your boss, F off, right? Like, you're just so
not okay.
But it's not okay for her to do those things. So trust yourself, you'll learn something from it. On a good note, I've actually had bosses that believe in me. Like, I've had like situations where because of my resilience, that has been an encouraged behavior in me. I moved to Amsterdam. I was there for 2 years before I got work. I was like, I'd wake up every day and I'd treat finding a job as a work, right? So I'd get up and I'd get dressed. I'd start doing emails and I'd do my cover letters. And then finally I got a job at the Dutch World Service, which I was totally underqualified for. Like, I had no idea about world news or current affairs, but I knew that I was really strong and a really hard worker and really earnest and resilient, right? This was like 10 years after this other job. And my boss there saw something in me. He saw a behavior, he saw a hunger, and he saw a real, I guess, earnestness to want to prove myself. And he harnessed that mm-hmm. power into, you know, creating these beautiful documentaries, those beautiful radio documentaries, which went on to win awards. And not only that, we had the good grace to say, you know what, you've won this award, you go to New York to accept it. And that was a really powerful thing. That was someone saying to me, I believe in you, you can do this. And it was probably a changing point then. Then I was like, hang on a minute, I am good enough. I am smart, because I think early in my life, I didn't think I was. I was always questioning that. I had that little voice going, well, you didn't go to university, so what makes you think you could do that? Like, you know, but then I was like,
yeah,
this little voice isn't really me. That's not me. And he taught me that. He taught me to say, you know what? That voice means nothing. That's just another voice in your head, and you can switch that off. You can go, thanks very much, voice. Thanks for coming, but I'm not actually going to listen to you. That's really powerful.
That's the age-old imposter syndrome kicking in again.
Oh, you know,
yeah.
And it's constant, still constant. It's just I listen less to it. And like I said, his encouragement meant that I went on to greater things for sure.
I want to ask you about like being your truest self, because as you spoke about earlier, you know, when you're growing up, you don't know who you are at the time, yeah. And you don't know how to behave, and you know you're trying to figure yourself out. Was there a moment where you were your truest self?
I think you're right, Mel. I don't think you recognized your truest self for a really long time, but my mom, with the one-way ticket, she probably recognized my truest self far before I did, which is the gift of hindsight now to look at that and say, hey, she recognized that. But I would say, I know it's going to sound so weird, but every day, even last night, I was at a party last night, and the people that work for me, they're like, oh, you're a great boss. You're super open. You're very honest about what you say. You're very clear. That means that I am every day bringing my truest self, and I'm okay with that. But it's taken a while to be okay with that. Like, I wasn't always bringing my truest self to my job and to my life and to everything. I was always thinking that my truest self wasn't perhaps something that people wanted to see. But the truth of the matter is they do like it. They feed off it. They're happy to be around it. It's like a satellite. So it's a daily thing, right? I came back to Australia 3 years ago, and I don't think I was my truest self when I came back 3 years ago. I got this job. I decided, you know, I was going to leave Europe. I was going to move back to Australia. I'd found this job. I got this job. I flew back, I landed, and I remember thinking, what have I done? Like, I thought I was Australian, but I'd left Australia 25 years previous. I was just not equipped. I wasn't Australian. And what I mean by that, I mean, I'm born and bred Aussie, but I had no idea how to operate in this culture. So I tried to pretend to be much more Aussie than I was, like trying to mirror what they were doing, and it was just failing. They were like, really turned off by it. They couldn't get me because they were like, are you European? Are you a fake Aussie? What are you doing? And then I got some really bad feedback, actually. I got some feedback that they weren't liking what I was doing. And then I realized perhaps the message I'm sending out is not being received properly, because I couldn't understand how people would get like think that I wasn't doing a great job for them because I love my work. I'm good at my work. And I was like, hang on a minute. This is me sending a message that's not receiving properly, which means I'm probably not being my truest self, being authentic. I hate to overuse that word, but that's the truth of it, right? And so then I decided to change my pattern and just come in and show up and be me, right? Warts and all, right? You're going to see it all, be vulnerable. And it changed. It really changed. It didn't change overnight. It wasn't like, oh, here she is. This is the real Mignon, right? The real Mignon, please stand up or anything like that. It was like the curtain parted. And, you know, a year later, here we are. And work is great. And, you know, the people are great.
I think that's the thing. You get a job or you get into a situation. And I mean, especially for me, in my experience, I've definitely shown up and I'm like, okay, I'm going to show the person that I think that they want to see.
Yes. Right?
I'm going to be like this professional, serious, you know, and pretend to know what I'm talking about. But people cut through that bullshit. They see it. They see it and they're like, no, this is fake, even though they don't know you personally.
Yeah. But I don't know if they know that it's fake. They just know that it feels off.
What's one piece of advice you'd want to leave with me and the listeners today?
Make mistakes, you know, show up and do it. Take a path. Don't waver from it. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to make mistakes. It's not a shame to say, hey, this wasn't right. Or, you know, it's also not a shame to actually own something and say, oh, I didn't do it correctly or it's not perfect. I think that's really important. Just that's the message, right? Just keep going. Keep pushing yourself.
Yeah.
It sounds really weird to say, oh, believe in yourself. But, you know, tell yourself you're good enough. Tell yourself you can do it. That's key because I think we often listen to that voice and think we aren't good enough, that we can't do it. I hear my daughter say that all the time. I can't. That's just to be banned, right? Like we can all do it. We can all try and just keep trying. Keep pushing yourself.
Totally.
You know, people make their own life choices and do their own experiences. These are just my experiences. But I think when I listened a lot to your podcast, Mel, everyone has this, there's one sort of thin red line, and that is every woman has decided to grasp an opportunity and run with it. You know you're doing good things when you have this weird feeling in your stomach and you push through it anyway. That's when the magic happens. That's when then things, you know, are going to go right, when they actually feel like they're going wrong.
Or they feel the most scary and like you can't do it.
Yeah, right? And because when you get on the other side, I always think of myself as the, I'm going to sound old, but, you know, the guy in Breakfast Club at the end, I think he comes out of school after detention and he does this air punch. And I honestly, yeah. Every time I win at work or in life, I do an air punch. I'm like, yes. It's really, actually feels great. Yes.
And actually, it's probably a really, really positive enforcement for your mental health, because again, like with those affirmations, you know, saying how great you are, how you're capable, how you're able, doing this kind of air punch physical movement is probably reinforcing that too.
Look, it's not going to change overnight, but it's all going to help, right? If you move the dial just a little bit, you will notice the difference, and then move it a little bit more. You know, no one's asking you to move the dial massively, but just move it a bit. So if you do go in the mirror as you're just about to leave, go, you're great, that's it, that's enough, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll laugh to yourself, yeah. And you'll be like, oh, fucking, I'm so silly. But you're silly, but you've also said you're great.
Yeah. I guess there's just one thing I wanted to cover off. Or was there a time where you didn't care about the opinion of others?
I always care about the opinion of others. I every day still care about what they say and what they think. I know people say don't care about that, you shouldn't worry, but I do think it's good to keep yourself in check and just be aware of what people are thinking and saying. Don't let it affect you, but it matters to me. It matters to me if people think I'm a nice person or if I'm a good colleague or a good friend. That really is important to me. It always has been because that's part of who I am inside. So, yeah, every day I want to make sure that opinions of me are high.
What if they're not? How do you deal with that?
Well, yeah, this week alone, I was dealing with a external company, and I don't think their opinion of me was very high. It was a whole convoluted issue about money, but Actually, you know what? I took humor out of it. I just thought, well, you can't please everyone, right? The people that matter in your life, the people that move around you and you interact with daily or that you care about afar, those opinions really matter. While the others are peripheral and somewhat important, the people that really know your true self, they're what matter, right?
All right. So as you know, every single guest gets to come on the show, be interviewed, and then give me a dare. So have you come up with something?
Oh, you've had some pretty good dares. And I was actually, it's hard. As you know, I'm quite a frugal person. I love a good bargain. I love not to spend any money, actually. So I'm going to challenge you to buy nothing new, nothing, at least for a week, nothing new. So you've got to use your food in your pantry. You know, don't pop to the shops and buy yourself a new blouse or jumper or whatever, or, you know, nothing new. So you've got to barter with people. You've got to pull in favors. You've got to swap things. That's what you've got to do.
Okay, even food.
All of it. I mean, I'm sure you've got a pantry full of food that you have not touched. You know what? You go to Google and you type in flour and butter and eggs, and it will tell you to make something. I'm telling you, it's ingenious.
So, but I can swap with people, right?
100%. It's just you're not actually going to purchase anything with currency.
All right.
So you can talk to friends and you can ask them to help you out.
So they can purchase something for me. They can purchase something and then I can swap with them something.
You can say to them, hey, have you got some apples? And I will walk your dog, you know, those kind of things. And it's everything, right? It's your food. It's what you might buy. So any of those kind of flippant purchases, you're going to have to think about this week where you're spending your money. Because I think these days we just get our card or our phone and just be like, bleep, 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 bleep. Oh my God.
We do.
And so now you're going to have to be a conscious, like this is going to be a conscious decision because you've got no money.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, that's going to be hard, but yeah, okay. For a week.
Well, however long you last, doll. However long you last. Come on, this is She Dares. And you're doing a dare, right? Pushing you out of your comfort zone. Feel it in your belly. You might be hungry. You might feel that hunger in your belly.
All right. We're on.
Good.
Thank you for doing it in your car.
It's a sauna, man. I've lost 10 kilos in this car.
Sorry for that.
No, like I said, this is the best place for sound. Totes is.
I hope to see you very soon.
It was a pleasure, Mel. Anytime. I'm looking forward to when we can catch up and do a real life hug. Oh!
Yeah, I know. I know. It's been too long.
Thanks for having me on the show. Bye.
This is the first day I'm doing Minion's Dare, and I think it's going to be okay because I didn't cheat, but like I filled up the car and I'm kind of just coming off this 3-week kind of cleanse, and so I've stocked up on everything that I need, but there's a lot of fresh stuff, so I'm hoping I should be okay. So fingers crossed, wish me luck. So I'm just making my smoothie and I've just realised I've run out of ginger, and searching through my cupboard and no ginger. I'm just gonna, this is like my morning routine. I can't believe I've forgotten it. I'm just gonna run down to Eva and see if she has any ginger. Be right back.
Ginger? Yeah, let me check. Sure, I have one. You can have it.
It's the first few days of the month, and I've just noticed that my PayPal and my bank account were pinging at me because I've got all my subscriptions and stuff coming out. I guess that counts as spending money. So have I failed? Not sure. My shoes have a hole in them and it's super wet outside. I don't have any other mountain boots. I definitely need to buy some. So I feel like this dare's going to fail.
You've got like a million shoes. Why do you need another pair?
There's a lot of sales going on. Christmas has just finished and I am struggling. There's a lot of buy me, look at this amazing offer. Deep breaths. I don't need stuff. I really don't need stuff, but I do. Damn it. There's just so many things that come up when you're not supposed to spend anything. And now I just want to buy everything. Mignon, this is much harder than I thought. So this was way harder than I expected, because actually, like, just asking my wife to fill up the car or buy something was pretty much the same as me buying it, right? And also just, you forget a lot of things. And then, like, an event comes up. I was supposed to visit a friend. So then I was driving further than I thought I would. So I would have to fill up with petrol. But I feel like I kind of cheated by getting Sam to fill up the car, and then my friend buying us dinner. But in the end, it did 4 days, but it's definitely made me think now more about what I spend money on, because there's so many subscriptions and there's so many times you just take Apple Pay, just, you know, put your phone on the thing, beep, done, and you don't really think about it. But Mignon, you've definitely made me think much more about what I spend my money on. I have always been a bit of a spender, but yeah. Whilst I didn't complete your week, Dare, I think I will continue to do stuff throughout the year, and I challenge everyone else to do the same. If you want to check out how the Dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.